Welcome to the first installment of a new weekly segment called Tales from the Road on the Brother Trucker Book Club podcast. I am your host, Graham Bradley. About a month ago, I visited a high school down in Eagle Mountain, Utah, and gave a presentation on the hero's journey and a couple of other things about storytelling, and it was to a class of writers, and some less serious than others. But one of the kids, I think he was a sophomore, asked what kind of authorial advice, professional advice, I had for him in terms of getting published. And I kind of laughed and I said, have a backup plan. And the reason for that is not just, you know, something that I've heard a whole bunch of times at writers' conferences and after listening to writers' podcasts over the years, but rather it's from personal experience. It's something that I learned the hard way. My time spent as a trucker, I've been a truck driver for about 6 years now, is significantly less than the time that I have spent as a writer. I started writing stories in elementary school and started finishing books in high school and then have been seriously pursuing it as an adult. It's something that I always knew that I wanted to do, and it's something that I'm fortunate my parents were very supportive of and encouraged me to do in my youth. And now here I am, and due to my, call it blind optimism or just short-sightedness, whichever one fits the bill most, I kind of always assumed that I would just nail it. I wrote a couple of books, I started querying agents and publishers and stuff, and lo and behold, none of them were interested in what I wrote because, looking back, it wasn't very good, it wasn't very unique, and frankly, I hadn't paid the bill yet in terms of languishing in ignominy. Miguel de Cervantes, who wrote Don Quixote, struggled for a very long time and ended up in the Navy and in slavery and in prison and all that before he wrote Don Quixote, and he died 11 years after it was published. Gary Paulson was publishing for a quarter of a century before he hit it big with Hatchet. The stories of the Christopher Paolinis and the Veronica Roths of the world are the exception. And as much as I wanted to be one of those wunderkinds who belted it out of the park on the first go, it was not to be. And unfortunately, I didn't plan well enough for that to happen. I went and served a mission for my church from 2003 to 2005, and then when I came home in 2005, I thought about college. I took a sales job that my dad recommended. That was a big, hot, flipping mess. I worked for a few months at a credit union, and then I got a job driving just a straight truck around Las Vegas working for a commercial kitchen company. Tried school again, thought I was going to be a nurse. Turns out I suck at chemistry, which is important for nurses to know. Was going to switch then to the humanities and be an English major, and then I was looking at the bill for that, and I realized I don't actually need to spend 20 grand on an English degree if all I really want to be is a writer. I can do literally anything else to pay the bills and just write. I had read enough autobiographies of other successful authors who just read a lot and wrote a lot, Stephen King, Louis L'Amour, and I figured maybe that was meant to be more my path, the layman's way. Met a girl, fell in love, got married, and right around that time, my brother, who owns wallquotes.com, that's a free shout out here on my podcast, you're welcome, they do vinyl lettering and signs and stuff, and he'd brought me in kind of as a satellite operation into his business in 2008, so while I was quote-unquote in college and I was working at a bookstore, he'd also bought me a sticker machine, and I was helping him with stick figures and little icons like that while he was cutting them out of outdoor vinyl for people to slap on their cars. So back when the stick figure craze was in full swing and hadn't yet become a dead meme, I was helping him sell those online, and kind of got the hang of the business. And when they were looking to expand, he said, hey, we're gonna need a production manager. So they hired me, and I ended up moving from Utah back to Las Vegas, where I'm from. Actually, from Henderson, Hendo represent. And right around the time I got married, I was working for my brother full-time, and that lasted for about 2.5 years. Along with taking the job working for my brother and getting married, I also landed an agent. I had continued to write in all this time, and I was querying and everything, and I got an agent, and I thought, this is it. You know, I'm a short distance away from finally realizing all of my dreams, and everything's going to be great. And I was in that particular state of limbo for about 2 years. And that brings us to 2013. Now, to give the full context of the story, I'm going to have to give a little bit of family history. My family consists almost entirely of alpha males, plus our little alpha female sister, who is the baby and the only girl, and all that stuff. We're a competitive breed, just by nature, us Bradleys. And as such, any of you who have worked for family know that it's different from working for any other operation. You end up talking to your boss the way that you wouldn't talk to a boss in any other outfit. And he was a little bit more patient with me, I guess, than a regular boss would have been. But after 2.5 years and a number of stress multipliers in our lives, not the least of which was me becoming a father for the first time, things came to a head, and they decided that it was time to part ways with me. And all of a sudden, I found myself looking at the corpus of my job skills, and there were plenty of things that I knew how to do, but not that I was certified in. I had been a handyman. I had worked with my family flipping houses in my teens. My first job in high school, my first real job in high school, was working as a tire tech. These were the kind of things that worked when I was younger, when I was getting by, and when I was living in a situation where my rent was $300 or $400 a month. Not when it was $800 a month, and certainly not when my wife was about to stop working so she could stay at home with our oldest son, who was just a baby. And I felt the pressure pretty quick to not only get a replacement job, but a replacement career, and on a scale that would replace the income that I had lost and that my wife had forfeited when she decided, it was something we had decided together, but when she had left the workforce so that she could be a full-time mom. And so the night that I got dismissed from duties at my brother's company, I came home and I was in no small amount of distress. There were plenty of tears. I'm not the kind to cry normally, even in situations where I would think that I should, but that one hit me like a ton of bricks. And you know, I'm a spiritual person. There was a lot of prayer involved and a lot of self-reflection, and I was very aware of how things had gone wrong. And you know, my brother was pretty concerned about how our relationship was going to go outside of work after that. We still hung out every morning. We went to the gym together. We were workout buddies, and he still came to pick me up the next day, and he was a little bit sullen. And I said, look, I've been thinking about this, and you guys were right to let me go, given the circumstances. I think his wife kind of helped him make the right decision on that front. I said, look, and this is something else that I realized later. It's like, if you hadn't fired me, I would have had to quit anyway, because, you know, the amount of money that I was making just on my own wasn't going to cover my, you know, the needs of my entire family. Which wasn't any knock on them. They were paying me very well. We had just, you know, grown beyond that circumstance when it had just been me and my wife and our little dog who chewed up the occasional piece of furniture. We were able to make it, but the situation changed, as anybody who's grown older knows. And I told him, like, look, all things considered, I'm glad that you did it. This is a chance for me to take care of something that I should have taken care of years ago, and that is the backup plan. Right around the time that this happened, a friend of mine from high school who I'd run into on Facebook the year before this, 2012, was my 10-year high school reunion. So in that time, Facebook had gone public, and you're finding friends from high school who are adding you to groups and stuff, organizing for the reunion, and then you stay in touch, yada, yada, yada. My buddy Roy was posting about trucking school tests that he was taking, and I was like, maybe there's something to this. I've always been a gearhead, motorhead. I've always loved driving. It was one of the few things that I looked forward to more than kissing a girl when I was a teenager, was getting my license and just getting something with a motor and four wheels that worked. And I always loved it. So I reached out to him and said, hey, you know, what's the sitch with this school? How does it work? And he gave me the information. So I told my wife, said, well, this is an option. Let me go down there and take a look at it. So they give me a rundown of the financials and the timeline and what I could expect to make and what the job would entail. And I looked at it, thought it over, took it back to my wife, said, "Hey, here's the deal. It would cost X amount of money. We've got it right now. We were in a position where we had just paid off some debt, bought a little bit of furniture, had a little bit in savings, and we set up a plan where I would pay for the school out of pocket. And as long as I didn't bomb the tests and I could learn how to actually drive a semi truck, in a matter of weeks, I would be out on the road with a trainer and would be making enough money to cover our rent, cover our bills, and the first year would be pretty comfortable. In fact, my first year as a trucker would be equal to the previous year where my wife and I had made money, both of us working full time at the same company. So that's how I got into trucking in 2013. I went to they called it the American Institute of Technology, but then they had to change it to the American Institute of Trucking. Either way, it was AIT in North Las Vegas, and they told me it would be $4,500 if I paid it out of pocket, or I could do their in-house financing option for $10,000. And holy cow, the last time I took on a $10,000 debt, I at least got a car out of the deal. So I said, "No, I'll just cover it." And that was how I ended up in trucking school, which I think is what I will cover in the next episode. So that's a bit of a hybrid story of how I got into trucking, but also how I generally failed to have a backup plan and how that affected me and my family. So whether you're a reader or a young writer or an aspiring trucker listening to this, I think the takeaway from it is most of the people that I've met who ended up with their CDLs were either people that grew up in families that had truckers, or people that kind of ended up in it because it was the quickest way to make a living, and had, like me, not really planned on anything else, or at least planned on something so far-fetched that they were kind of obligated to replace their income with something as necessary as the transportation industry. So next week I'll tell you a little bit about trucking school, what all that entailed, what I learned from it, and where I ended up working. That's it for this week. I hope you got something out of that. We'll check back with you next Friday for another trucking story. And in the meantime, keep your eyes peeled for the next book review episode on Monday. Until then, drive safe, and I will see you out there.